Mets just wrapped up a 3-game series out in San Francisco. Francisco Lindor is hot. Prospect report coming at you. And James is back on American soil. That and so much more on this episode of the Mets Stub Podcast. What is up, Mets fans? Welcome back to another episode of the Mets Up Podcast. Honestly, don't really like the feeling. We lost a series, wasn't great, but we ended it well with a nice win on Game 3. Francisco Lindor playing better, as we said. We got James back on American soil, so we're glad to be talking to him. Although, maybe not. I don't know. We hope he didn't bring the jinx back when he got back over here, James. But glad to have you back in New York City. And glad to start talking about a little bit of baseball here, because there was a lot to talk about in this series, as well as the prospect report. But first and foremost, how does it feel to be back?
I felt really vindicated that the Mets dropped 2 games my last 2 days abroad. So I was like, all right, thankfully, like, losing those 2 games on Monday and Tuesday, I can't be a jinx coming back. The Mets are 1-0 when I'm transatlantic, though. They won when I was in flight today. So maybe I just have to hover above the Atlantic Ocean for the Mets to do the best they possibly can. But we'll cross that bridge if and when we get to it. It's so funny to me that when the most international traveler comes into New York, it always winds up at JFK. Like, that's the international airport for New York. And that place is such a fucking pit of despair. Like, to introduce the world to New York City with that airport, and then to go from that airport to the J train, I'm just like, how is this real life? On my J train just now at like 11 o'clock at night, there was a teenager with one hand. He had a hook. He had a metal hook instead of a hand. There were multiple sleeping.
A hook.
He had a metal hook instead of a hand. Right hand, too. And he had a metal hook. He's wearing nice white cement Jordans. And then multiple homeless people sleeping. There was a European family just being very jovial, like 3 feet away from a sleeping homeless man. There was these dudes from outside the train were catcalling these girls in the train. And they were like banging on the window. And then they gave him the finger. And then the dudes gave him the finger back and everybody started laughing. It was a very nice, like, bang, introduction right back to New York City.
Yeah, you're not in England or Spain or Morocco or Italy anymore. You are back in the concrete jungle that is New York City. Yeah, JFK, probably one of the worst airports in the entire world. It's just so terrible. Obviously, with international flights, you kind of can't avoid it. It's that or Newark, and going to New Jersey is really annoying from where both of us live. But I will not take a domestic flight at JFK, always to LaGuardia. It's so nice there now. My favorite airport right now.
LaGuardia is amazing. But JFK is like one of the worst airports in the world, one of the worst places in the world. But this Mets series, in a very nice place in the world, San Francisco, like that, the SNY booth was taking a drive around the scenic sites. The boys did that weird bit on Lombard Street where Steve Gelbs was the driver for Keith and Gary, just to keep putting Steve Gelbs' moonface in his place over and over again much as they can. But weird series for the Mets. We told you guys this Giants team is strange. They're weird. They're unconventional. They're not normal. The players in the lineup, the pitchers in the rotation, the guys coming out of the bullpen, everything is really weird. Like, they just are, we feel like their backs are against the wall as an organization. They almost have to make the postseason this year to keep everybody around. So they just threw a lot of shit against the wall, got a lot of like these strange, like, mid-level type of players that kind of will forever limit them from signing a star, because they a lot of stars said no to them for the last few years. Correa, who that was a good one for both of these teams. It kind of wasn't Carlos Correa, but thank God both these teams said no to him. But Aaron Judge saying no at the last second to them. I'm trying to think if anybody else was. Yamamoto this offseason, Shohei, like, but no one ever.
Bellinger was supposed to be going there.
Yeah, but even Bellinger wasn't. He's not on the level of like a franchise altering star. He's just like a good player. Like, I don't think Bellinger, Soler, Chapman are really that different at the end of the day. But that's kind of just where the Giants have been shopping, just trying to, like, spackle this roster together, because there are a lot of interesting pieces. Like, you guys saw Logan Webb up close, who's just he might be the best healthy pitcher in baseball right now. He's just weird, so it doesn't feel like it. But it's like him, Zach Wheeler, Jared Jones, slipping him in there. Like, I don't know who's else going to be on the tier one of those guys. I guess slipping Jared Jones there for fun. But weird series, not – Just strange, weird way to end the trip. Also,
I always feel like whenever we go to San Francisco, never feels right. I don't know what it is, but like the games, maybe again, it's the 9:45, 10 o'clock start on the East Coast. Not that really matters to me, but I do feel it still. Like, watching a game starting after I have dinner. I watch baseball while I'm eating dinner, not after I have dinner. So it doesn't feel right. It's got me all messed up. And then we always play weird. We never seemingly play that well there. The night games are freezing cold. It's like in the 50s, 40 degrees with that wind always howling. And it's just like a hard park to hit in as well. Now, that being said, like, we ran into Logan Webb, who just absolutely diced us up. One of the best pitchers in baseball. Glad I didn't listen to your advice to not trade for him in fantasy. Take the Mets fan cap off there. Gets me a lot of points every week. He looks really good. Mets cap on. That sucked. Damn it. I wish we could hit this guy, but he really is so nasty. And your boy Keaton Wynn, you said, don't sleep on Keaton Wynn. Keaton Wynn did look really good. I don't really get it, but he did pitch well.
It is funny because you're talking about fantasy of Logan Webb. I just also made a trade for Keaton Wynn just because I'd say like part of it was like watching some of that game Monday. I was like, yeah, this guy actually is good. It's more about him having, he's doing the thing that a lot of pitchers are doing this year. We're going to call it the Reed Garrett, where he's like, the splitter is going to be my primary pitch. And I've heard a lot of people kind of referring to the splitter differently recently as more people are throwing it more often now as the split finger fastball, because truthfully the pitch is a split finger fastball. Now that we're seeing again more and more people in baseball use the primary pitch, and when interestingly enough he threw it so much more in the zone that I think we're used to seeing most splitter guys throw it, because I'm thinking of the way, even the way Reed Garrett throws it primarily, it's not that much in the zone. Trying to think of other guys who are introducing splitters. I don't think Wynn's introducing a splitter by any means. He might be. Actually, I have no idea what his pitch mix was last year, but it's just, it's mostly a swing and miss pitch. And the fact that he was throwing in the zone this game almost 50% of the time, it was getting a chase. It wasn't getting that much of a chase rate. The Mets were actually making a lot of contact on it in the zone and hitting the ball hard sometimes, but just that playing off that fastball that was getting up to 97 with good rise on it. It was a good little game from Keaton Wynn. He's the kind of guy who just, you'll look up at the end of the year. He might only have one good year his whole career, but he'll be like, wow, Keaton Wynn just put together a 3.3 ERA season in San Francisco over a summer with Patrick Bailey behind the plate and good outfield defense behind him. But he just, him and Logan Webb, I don't want to put those guys in the same category because they're not the same pitchers, but they just had the Mets purely in fits the first two games of the series. They almost had felt like no chance to score off either of them. And then coupled that with pretty bad defense, I feel like, behind Severino and Jose Quintana. It just was a couple games where almost entirely did not feel like the Mets had a chance to win either of them.
Yeah, the Mets weren't particularly making a lot of plays to help either. You know, even in game three, like Pete got a little bit sloppy at the end of the game. There were some defensive lapses from this team. McNeil made some weird plays too in this series that you normally are accustomed to see him make, or not making them negatively. Like there was even one that dropped in front of Severino in game two when he was technically perfect almost through five, Severino. Yeah. And that one dropped in front of him. I was like, oh, like how'd you not get to that ball? Weird jump, weird read, whatever it was.
He didn't look very aggressive going after it either. I don't know, because maybe it's like a snip snap thing with McNeil playing outfield, because he was kind of told he wasn't going to play much outfield. Now he might be playing a lot more, and Beatty is just not, he's not exactly the most fleet of foot, so he wasn't going to get out there in a play where there was like mostly a shift and short left. But McNeil had a weirder play on Monday where he cut in front of Francisco Lindor on the shortstop side of second base and just literally kicked the baseball. I think he thought he was hopping over it, like trying to be kind of tricky, but he quite literally just kicked it. It bounced off his ankle. That was, it made me flashback for a second in 2021, because the exact same kind of play that made Francisco Lindor fight him in the clubhouse in the tunnel, where he's like, this is my side of the base, please don't come on my side of the base. Like and Lindor was right behind him going to make the play. I don't remember who was running, if McNeil had to cut it off maybe to get the out, but even with his momentum going away, it's just, it was a weird series. And also weird because on this road trip, McNeil has raised his OPS 100 points. He has hit probably the best he has all season in the last week. We have some knob watch from our boy Jordan Simpson.
Sound the alarms.
Sound the alarm, knob watch.
Oh, see, Jordan can make us a little jingle. If Jordan's listening, you can make us a little jingle for knob watch, like knob watch, and then we're good to go.
I want to see, because he told me he's using a different bat. It's he's using a completely different bat model. He can't find the breakdown description of it online, but off the bat, no pun intended, it's a much different size. Last year he was using about a 34-35 inch between 31-33 ounces. This year he's swinging a 33-31.5. So it's a significantly different length bat, which I think Jeff has always kind of done well with that very long bat. But it's his own signature model, as he said, which is kind of crazy. He sent me a picture of the Pro XR icon. It's like it's a slanted knob. It's very knobby. It's a very knobby knob, but basically just he's swinging well right now, so the bat's working out. He actually finally has also hit the ball hard this road trip, which Jeff hasn't done at all this season. And again, from last Wednesday to this Wednesday, Jeff McNeil has raised his OPS 100 points, went from 650 to 737. Huge.
He's in his home state. He was nice and comfortable. And I mean, like, again, these first two games, kind of not that much to talk about, because relatively speaking, the Giants did just beat us. Like, yeah, we said there were some plays that could have been made here and there, but at the end of the day, like, you look at the box score, you watch the games, Giants just won. Sometimes that happens in baseball. You just lose some games here and there. It does suck that Michael Conforto did most of the damage to us, and you mentioned it in the preview. But he's really good. He's completely back. Like,
yeah.
I saw him take some swings. He had a double, I think, in the left center field gap in game two against Severino or whoever came in after him. And I was like, damn, I really miss that swing. Like when, yeah, was, when that guy's on, he's got one of the prettiest swings.
I feel bad for Conforto though, because I think he as a player has kind of just like missed the era where he would have been paid a lot of money. Whereas like now, a guy like Conforto, who's never going to hit 35 home runs and doesn't play very good defense, is not very athletic. We're just not in a point in baseball where that guy's over 30 years old and will ever get more than a 2 or 3 year contract. Again, maybe even more than two. I doubt he ever gets that the rest of his career, which sucks because he is a good player. And I think he's going to have a very nice, like, I don't want to call it twilight. It makes me feel like a geezer to call this the twilight of Max Conforto's career because he's like 31, 32. But like, he's probably going to have a 5 year stretch now where he just is a good player on random teams across the country as a corner outfielder who doesn't really play against every lefty. But him and Flores, seeing them in this series makes me feel so old. People were dropping the stat for Monday because it just so happened very ceremoniously that Monday marked the point in Wilmer Flores' career where he had played more games, not as a Met than as a Met, which made me all at the same time feel old, sad, stupid. Just every, all these bad emotions came in at once where I was like, why, how could this possibly be true?
I also want to talk about Starling Marte too on the offensive side, swinging the bat well again, especially against Logan Webb. Had a good day against Logan Webb. Had two hits, I think, against Keaton Wynn as well.
I want to say, I don't remember if it was against Webb or Wynn, but he had dropped a bunt single. I think it was Webb. And for some reason, with the ball right in front of him, tried to just take second base on the ball. No, it was Wynn. And the ball squirted into like the back of the infield. I won't even give a short right field. And he was thrown out by nine steps. Like I love the ambition from Starling Marte, but just like, just steal the base, dude. You don't have to get second base that badly there. Just steal the bag. I was laughing watching that.
Yeah, that was a weird play. But he's swinging the bat well. Starling Marte, two hole. It's working. Whatever. We'll keep it going. But we always did say, again, disclaimer, we were wrong. But if Starling Marte hits 300 with an 800 OPS, yeah, hit two. That's fine. That makes sense. That checks.
And he's lifting the ball more than he has most of his career. He's hitting the ball harder than he has most of his career. I don't know what's gotten into him. I'm happy it has. He's been, besides Pete, because Pete has been, it's been weird, but he's been the best hitter. But he's, Starling Marte has been the most consistent hitter in this Mets team all year, which again, feels strange, but it's super true. And it's just, this team's going to have trouble scoring anyway these next few weeks. Hopefully JJ Martinez actually is back on Friday and he helps like kind of glue this lineup together. But without Marte, I don't even know where this offense would be. But also these games, he gets tons of hits and like Lindor and Pete aren't driving him in. So nothing really comes of it anyway.
Yeah. The only time we saw them really hit together was like the Dodger series, the Pirates series. And what do you know, the Mets kind of like steamed roll in those two. And Lindor has been really good since they gave him that ovation, which we saw in game three now, since April 12th, which was the home game against the Royals. That was the give Francisco Lindor the standing ovation. All 6,000 people that were at Citi Field that day gave a standing ovation. Since that day, after the 4-for-5 today, he's hitting 326 with a 392 on base, 587 slugging. He started the year 5-for-59. I think we can't understate how insanely bad that is. And he's gone 16-for-46 since that moment. So I know the numbers still don't look good for Francisco Lindor, but again, we know if you're listening to us, you're not stupid, you're not an idiot, so you know that Francisco Lindor is a good ball player. But spread this to your uncles, your parents, your friends who are like, that Francisco Lindor, he's overpaid. He had 15 games where he was bad, and he's had 15 games where he's been one of the best hitters in baseball over that stretch. Like, it ebbs and flows. It's a long season.
Just in the last week, just this West Coast road trip, he raised his OPS 200 points from like from 470 to 670. Like, again, there's probably another 3 or 4 weeks till the OPS is about 770, 790, 800 again, just like it quite literally always is. And he had tons of great defensive plays this series too. Tons of also really close plays that almost make you frustrated, like that Nick Ahmed single. I don't remember if that was off Quintana or Severino that like scored two runs, kind of iced the game in the fifth inning because the Mets couldn't hit in cold San Francisco one of those nights. But just like, he gets the balls you don't even expect him to get to. So you almost get frustrated when he can't convert them for outs. But just like, damn, I can't believe he got to that ball. He had a nice one today, Wednesday, also in the hole. Just, he's just, I don't want to like waste breath talking about it, but I just know he's still really good. I'm very happy and very confident. Everything, just the gaslighting that happens for Francisco Lindor's cold stretch every single year, and then to just when he's really good again and is a perennial all-star and will be top five in MVP voting again, it's just, that's the recipe. That's, it's going to happen. Just, we have to be ready for the ebbs and flows.
Yeah, 4-for-5 day, 2 homers, 4 RBIs, huge part of the win, along with the good ball player that is Tyrone Taylor. Especially with McNeil starting to hit a little bit more now. McNeil's got that OPS up to 737 after today's game. Tyrone Taylor is hitting 327 with an 868 OPS. We can't be doing the Joey Wendell experiment at second base right now when McNeil and Tyrone Taylor are swinging as well as they can.
Wendell made a couple of nice plays this series. He had a much better defensive series than he's had. I'm just saying, like, I understand you wanting Tyrone Taylor in the field. I do too. He adds too much to his ball club because he's not like a bad defender either. But especially right now without Francisco Alvarez, like, we need more offense than defense. I wonder how it shakes now with JD coming on the roster. This is a real chaos episode. I've been awake since USA time.
It's good.
Yeah, 6 a.m. trying to get around. I've been not awake since then. Traveling since then. Paris Airport had FIFA. I tweeted it. They just had controllers and consoles set up. You could just play FIFA. I was playing some Parisians. I'm gonna FIFA. It's incredible. It's
did you smoke them?
I wanted to play. Smoked them.
Good. Yeah.
Fuck them. We played the Milan Derby. I beat the guy 6-0. It was amazing. But nice. He spoke not a lick of English. Like, I was just trash talking. He had no idea what I was talking about. I was like, see that? Nice one, huh? And he was like, yeah. I was like, nice. I appreciate that. But what were you talking about? Baseball? I've been up for like 24
hours. JD Martinez, Tyrone Taylor. How does it fit?
Yeah, because I'm wondering if, just like how we were thinking about in spring, how, again, just being the creature I am, thinking about playing time, half because of fantasy baseball, half because of this show, and just thinking about the Mets, like, who's getting the backup center field reps? And it was Tyrone Taylor. We've seen Nimmo get some of them, too. But Harrison Bader's almost played so well that I don't want to take him off the field very much. I wonder now, with JD Martinez on the roster and the way that DJ Stewart is still hitting, if he winds up getting some of these backup outfield reps, too. And if Wendell, like, I'm sure JD Martinez takes Zach Short's roster spot. So then Wendell becomes the rotating infielder. Now if Jeff McNeil just becomes basically primarily an infielder again, and then DJ Stewart kind of, because we've seen him come in late a few innings in the outfield this season. I'm wondering if he gets a start over the next few weeks and he gets the rotating outfield spot. Now it becomes kind of him versus Tyrone Taylor for that last like playing time spot.
Yeah, I think it definitely is. And what makes that good, too, about them battling for that last spot, theoretically, as weird as it sounds, is that they complement each other. DJ Stewart, lefty. Tyrone Taylor, righty, obviously, which is really good. You can put them in different moments, different times. They have different values. Tyrone Taylor is obviously mashing. DJ Stewart's hit the ball really well this year as well. It's a good problem to have. These are the problems we like to have as Mets fans and as an organization. We're like, oh man, like we have a few too many guys that are a little valuable on this team right now, as opposed to being like, man, who do we keep on here? Do we keep Zach Short or do we call up Jose Iglesias? Like, what's next?
Jose Iglesias is not hitting well in the minor leagues either. Well, it didn't even include him on the prospect report. Obviously, he's not a prospect, but
wouldn't dare.
Yeah, no, of course. It's also like we're talking about these guys. It's still Tyrone Taylor and DJ Stewart. These are still guys who are in the fringes of major league rosters. Any of these guys cannot be on the team in 3 months, but it's still just good players to have. Tyrone Taylor, just, I feel like when he's in the lineup, really good things happen. I don't know like his win-loss record as a starter this year, but I feel like it's probably one of the guys who's better on the team as the rotational guys. Like, it's definitely a lot better than Joe.
I'll find it.
Yeah, dude, I'll find it.
You can start talking.
Yeah, I want to do a little quick Severino breakdown, too, because he was overshadowed by Logan Webb, but as we told you guys in the preview, this was an ace-off. Tyrone?
In games that he's played in, the Mets are 11-7.
11-7, that's just played, not even started. It's kind of nice. Got to get Tyrone Taylor played in there, good things happen.
Do you want starts?
Yeah, sure, if you could find starts. That's almost every single win they have, Tyrone Taylor's touched the field. I think they, 13 or 14 wins? He's been in the field for all of them?
Yeah.
That's awesome. But Severino, again, guys, shame on a lot of the Mets fans that quit on Severino after he got BABIP to death in a windy, cold afternoon in Milwaukee, which is weirdly the day I left on this trip, which now it's like all coming full circle. It's like it never happened. But those first almost five innings were totally perfect. He wound up getting nickel and dime for a bunch of singles. We talked about the blooper before, a couple balls that squirted through the infield, only four hard hit balls in six innings, five strikeouts, and three earned runs. It was just some good timely hitting by the Giants. And also he was going against the behemoth of Logan Webb, who you just cannot lift the ball or hit hard against him. He's so much touch with that sinker and changeup. It's fucking crazy how good he is. But Severino, again, early the season, has just trusted his velocity so much, filled up the strike zone with it, dared people hit it, and they basically have not been able to do it. The only times that any rallies have been sustained against Severino are these like little dinky single rallies, the Brewers game and then this one, and then my brain's so jumbled right now. But for this game, Severino threw over 60% of his pitches in the zone and almost 70% of the pitches he threw in total, 70% of the pitches he threw in total were fastballs and sinkers. So it's just take it. He got to 98 a few times. He sat very comfortably right at 95, 96. He was just letting guys get after it and they really can't hit it. And if we're seeing this Luis Severino right now, and he still doesn't even have super good of a feel for the new changeup, the slider, the sweeper, the cutter, all these other things, like on a start-by-start basis, if he could just kind of tweak some of these mechanics a little bit, get these off-speed pitches together, like this could be a very nice run for Luis Severino this summer. I'm really looking forward to seeing him hopefully just stay on this path that he's on, have this really nice home ballpark that he's never had his entire career, and just have a beautiful season, beautiful run this summer. Because everything we're seeing right now is all the foundational building blocks of someone who's going to have a very good year. Not fool's gold at all. And the full season ERA, like five starts in, is 2.67.
2.67.
Yeah. Awesome. Really good.
Yeah, he's looked really good, and he kept us close in that game too, again, because going up against Logan Webb, not going to score. Mets almost brought it back in the end, but then they brought in Camilo Doval. Did you see the clip of when Camilo Doval was warming up? Maybe the scariest moment in baseball history. He's warming up. They cut the lights for his intro, but they cut the lights as he's about to throw a pitch to the catcher in the bullpen, and the ball gets released as the lights get turned off. Imagine trying to catch Camilo Doval with the lights on. Imagine you turn them off. I mean, can we talk to the bullpen catcher? Is he okay? Did he make the play?
He threw one of the craziest wild pitches I've ever seen in my life in that game, too. Or it might have been Tuesday, Monday. I don't remember which day the intro was, because these games were happening at like 4 o'clock in the morning for England time where I was. But just, he spiked the ball so badly, like 100 miles an hour. It's funny, watching a lot of these like condensed game replays, a lot of Giants fans do not like Camilo Doval, which is hilarious to me. He's one of the most disgusting. There were so many YouTube comments about, like, I don't trust Doval. Like, we need a real closer. We need a better closer. We're going like 3 years back now where the guy's been basically unhittable, one of the most sturdiest relievers in baseball. He throws demon pitches. He's so fun. He's one of my reliever crushes. You know that. He has been for a long time. He's such a freak of nature. Especially gumming him after Tyler Rogers. It's fucking stupid. It's not fair. And also, for some reason, across all of baseball, nobody can hit Tyler Rogers except for the Mets. I don't know why, but for the last 2 years, we always get to Tyler Rogers. Nobody else in baseball gets to him for even a moment.
No, I don't know what it is. I wish I could tell you what it is. I simply have no clue. It doesn't make any sense because, like you said, nobody touches him. Mets keep that ERA a little bit high for him. Speaking of another good reliever, our man, Reed Garrett, looked human today, but also his human was still pretty disgusting.
So disgusting. I want to shout out my guy, TJ Stats, Thomas Nesico. I talk about him a lot. He does his own like Stuff Plus daily for pitching. He put out a Reed Garrett thread that went like hyper viral a couple days ago. He tagged me in it too because I interact with him a lot. He was like, yeah, James Shannon, I think you're going to like this thread. And he also tagged me with Jared Seidler, who's a Mets fan, but who does the prospect stuff for Baseball Prospectus. Very curmudgeon-y. Does not like me at all. I've tried to interact with him in the past. Nice. He will ignore me every single thing I say. Definitely hate him. So I would love to hear how, I'm sure, upset he was that he was tagged with me in a post about like a fun relief pitcher on the Mets. But guys, Reed Garrett, he just says fuck fastballs. I'm not throwing him ever. Another start where he only threw 4 sinkers, 4 fastballs. This is actually much more percentage wise than he has in any time this year. And he got his hardest fastball of the season, 98.4 miles an hour. He uses those fastballs in such a cool way where they're just like Andrew Bailey said this. I've talked about it a few episodes ago where if you're pitching, think of it like boxing and your fastballs are jabs. And we've heard like Scherzer and Verlander talk about this too. And Christy Mathewson back in the day, 100 years ago, where it's just like you sit where you want to sit with your fastball, but you need another edge for that fastball. Because sometimes you're throwing a fastball for the guy to make contact. Sometimes you're throwing a fastball to get a swing and miss. And he got one, I forgot Reed Garrett, was maybe Soler, right when he came into the game. He got swing and miss early in that bat, right when Manaea came out. And Manaea looked so mad to come out of the game in 4 2/3 innings. He looked frustrated. He looked so pissed, but he was already at 100 pitches. He kept walking, guys.
Props to Carlos Mendoza. That was the right time to take him out. He had to come out there.
Totally. And these Sean Manaea starts, they're so funny because he's just throwing shit at the sink. Like he threw a lefty-lefty sweeper to Conforto that ended up like right on his hands. And Conforto was like, what the hell? Like had a bad swing on it. But it's just so fun to watch Reed Garrett. And he's doing all of these crazy pitching things. Like I was talking about the velocity thing. Like he was holding his velocity today really well. The splitter is just, he only threw one of them in the strike zone out of 9 that he threw. And it somehow was a pitch that was still just not letting the Giants do any damage on it at all. He did give up the one home run, the first earned run of the season, to Tyler fucking Fitzgerald of all people. Wall
I said it.
Too. You did? What'd you say? That he's going to do something to us?
Last episode, I was like, I don't know. Tyler Fitzgerald, never heard of him. He's going to do something this series. I know he will.
And he had a wall scraper off Reed Garrett to give his first earned run of the year, which sucks, but also like, whatever. It was a righty-righty, like little cut gyro slider that just was right, middle in on him. He just put it up in the air. But ball was flying today in San Francisco. It's just, he's awesome. He's I'm not even trying to like be like crazy, be sarcastic, be hyperbolic. He's been the Mets team MVP this year. I think this team probably has three or four fewer wins if he's not on this team, or if he's like last year's version of Reed Garrett instead of this year's version of Reed Garrett. Like, he's fully taken the league by storm. Fantasy baseball people are talking about him. Pitching data people are talking about him. It's all very real. I'm going to say it every single episode because he's fucking awesome. I'm so happy we have him.
You know, Reed Garrett was an MPB guy, right? And then came back to America. Did you know that?
I did not know that. I feel like we probably talked about that. I mentioned that last year, but it's something that's just not in my mind whatsoever.
Yeah, I believe he played for the Cebu Lions, because I've been seeing the Yaku Cosmopolitan guy tweeting about him. He's like, another former MPB guy doing well out in Major League Baseball. Just saying, pretty good league. But yeah, Reed Garrett's been incredible. And you know who else has been incredible? Adam Ottavino, again, just keeps so getting good. Big outs for us. Three strikeouts in an inning in a third. He was so insanely not that good last year. And then, like, he was so good in 2022. Not that great last year. This year he's been so money. Another guy like that's just keeping this bullpen so solid, so important for them to play well. And I like that they got their work too. Got Diaz in the game, who, again, looked human, wasn't really throwing that hard again, 94, 95 miles an hour, which is, are we concerned yet? Or is that just him being like, it's April, I'm not going to start pushing it just yet?
He did get to 97 and a half today, which I think is either the hardest or second hardest pitch he's thrown so far this season. He's been leading on the slider more. And I think that's, I'm significantly more concerned with his slider right now. His slider doesn't feel like it has the same kind of, maybe just because the fastball isn't coming in as hard, so it doesn't have the same gradient of velocity. But that's the pitch that seems like it's not getting as many swings and misses. The hitters are squaring up more often than they have. Again, today, I think it was nubbed around a few times. But the team still says they're not concerned about it at all. Edwin still says, I'm very literally shaking off rust. I haven't thrown competitive pitches in a full year. Like, and he still, as we say, he looks human, has an ERA at one through the first month of the season. So it's like really not even a half a concern whatsoever. It's just, it's very cool the way this bullpen is being held together. And we've talked about having glue guys hold this bullpen together. Reed Garrett just has simply been the glue guy. Like, the fact that he can come in and they can rely on him for how many? He threw 34 pitches. So you don't have to be through 26. I guess the off day Thursday, so you could do that. But Reed Garrett just having these 30 pitch outings is amazing. And that's something that this team hasn't really done, I guess, intentionally the last few years. Well, the Buck Billy Epler show, they weren't really thinking a ton about stuff like this. But just having these guys that kind of blend your starters and relievers together are really, really, really important for keeping workloads down. Especially when we have a starting rotation that we've talked about a lot. These are not deep game pitchers. Like, Jose Quintana is just like, he's just grinding it out. He got saved by Alfonso Marquez in a lot of at-bats where he probably should have walked guys, but he wound up just striking guys out looking. Usually when you get that many backwards Ks, it's more about the umpire than the pitcher. And it just seemed like a game where he got bailed out a few times. And Minaya, too, it's just like, he does what he does, but he has like one system, one method, and if it's not working, he's going to grind. And like, the stuff is pretty good usually, but it's just, really right now, besides Severino and weirdly Budo, it's just none of these pitchers are like attack. These aren't attack type pitchers. Like, these aren't pitchers that are coming at you who are going to do anything to stay in the game. Even those watching Logan Webb throw. Yeah, exactly. Watching Logan Webb throw anything, I was like, wow, that must be nice. Would love that for myself.
Yeah, I mean, Miss Kodai Senga, definitely. Last little bit from the games as well. Sean Reed Foley back on the roster, pitching game one. Got up to 96, which is great to see from him. We know you were a big fan of his in spring with the stuff that he was showing. And Josh Walker back onto the Mets roster because, of course, Brooks Raley on the IL. We like to carry two lefties around. He's now the second lefty on the roster. You know me, I'm always a big Josh Walker fan. I know he, like, balks all the time. Like, weirdly had, like, four balks last year. I think that's just Buck making him tight, I'm going to be honest. But he got up to 95 as well. So that was a good thing. I'm a big Josh Walker guy. Big friggin' dude, too, Josh Walker.
Big dude. The ladies gotta love Josh Walker. Dude, he looks like a fireman or something. He's like just a fucking beast. But we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the fact that this whole Brett Beatty thing, he's looking not that good again. And I'm definitely starting to get a kind of tiny bit worried about what the future actually means for him.
He did have that weird hamstring thing, and I don't know if you've noticed when he's running. He's not running that particularly well right now. So I think tomorrow's a huge off day for them. Don't play. Come back Friday. I guess we'll talk about the pitching matchups when we get to the series preview here. But let him get a full day off back in New York, get home, get comfy, get a little massage, whatever he's got to get. I'm sure that's bothering him a little bit. It kind of felt like it was. He still has the average up. Like, the average isn't going down, but there is no extra base hit pop right now.
It's just it's weird because right now the results are better, even though the OPS is sinking like a stone. But last year, a lot of the underlying things he was doing better, he's not really doing anymore. Like, it's kind of, he's chasing more than he was last year. He's not hitting the balls hard. He's not lifting the ball as much. He's not pulling the ball as much anymore. Like, a lot of the things that gave me more hope last year when it looked worse are not happening now, even as these results are better. I see that he's still confident. I think his at-bats, like, overall are better, like, even though he's chasing more often. But when I watch him, he seems like he's more in control of his at-bats. He seems like he's just more confident working deeper into counts. So I'm not like pressing the panic button or saying anything, but just I just wanted to mention it because something I've seen, something I've noticed, just we're getting into a point in the season where a lot more stats are stabilizing now. Like, we're a guy like Brandon Nimmo. If you guys go on his Savant page, it's like, it's pure sex. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that he's going to start lacing the ball. Even he keeps hitting the ball hard and he keeps finding gloves. Like, he just can't kind of break through right now. Again, like, same with Starling Marte, where it's like, he's lifting the ball more, he's pulling the ball more, he's hitting it harder. Like, things are happening where I'm confident. Like, the last thing that's going to stabilize for these guys this season is going to be the power metrics, going to be the batted ball stuff. Like, but everything we're seeing in terms of per pitch, chase, zone contact, like, that's all stuff that
16% walk rate Nimmo, like,
yeah, like, everything is totally career. I couldn't even be less worried about Brandon Nimmo right now. I'm like, there's nothing I'm less worried about in the world than Brandon Nimmo. But the Bailey stuff is just like, the swing decisions are worse than they ever have been. The Seager metric, I've talked about a few times on this, Robert Orr from Baseball Perspective, Seager metric, which is made major media headlines. Like, I heard Gary talking about it last weekend too. But Brett Bailey is last in baseball on that. So just going to say that and leave it there, and then just, like, keep being confident in our boy.
Keep being confident in our boy. Hopefully he stays confident as well. That's all we want. Now, to talk about the prospect report, because we got some prospects to talk about. Adrian Hauser, conversation right now in Mets world. Like, if he continues to pitch like this, is he going to stay in the rotation? What do you do with him? Especially when Christian Scott is making it really, really hard to not be on the major league roster.
Another game for Christian Scott where it's so apparent that he's very ready for what this is. He pitched into the seventh inning for the first time in the minor league season, 6 1/3, 8 strikeouts, just 1 walk, 2 earned runs, 10 swings and misses on 85 pitches. Again, getting to the seventh inning and 85 pitches. And if you look at his pitch counts per game, it seems very obvious that the Mets are trickling him up. He went from the 50s to the 60s to 75 and now 85. So I think they're just getting him ready for 100 pitch workload probably before he gets to the major leagues, which is, again, I think that's different than how we saw David Stearns bring pitchers in. Maybe it won't be that way. Maybe it's just him doing workload stuff. But he really is only going to have 110 innings this season in total, because he only threw 85 last year, and he's only 2 years away from being a reliever at the University of Florida throwing a sinker. So there's not that many bullets in him, which is all another reason why I think maybe that they're not using as many in these minor league outings. Like, this is by far his longest, but this was another very weird game for him where you see the strikeouts and the no walks, but there was another home run he gave up with the two earned runs, but that was the only damage that was even close to being done against him. They play the Columbus Clippers, which happens to be a very left-handed heavy minor league lineup with a couple like quasi-major leaguers in there, one being Kyle Manzardo, who hit the home run off of Christian Scott. And just looking at his, looking at the pitch charts of this game, he very much didn't have a feel at all for his changeup or his gyro slider, which he uses a lot against lefties. Because against the righties, he was only throwing fastball sweepers. It was the only two pitches that righty saw that game. He didn't throw any righty-righty changeups. He didn't throw any righty-righty gyro sliders. But the changeups were way off the plate and low. The sliders were left a couple of them up. Like, it wasn't a good mix of those pitches. I think the home run he gave up to Manzardo was a slider that he hung up a little bit. And this is something I talked about with Christian Scott in the spring. Something that, like, after watching him pitch a few times, became apparent that he's just... The strikeout walk rate's amazing because he just fills up the zone because he's a bulldog and he's very confident in his stuff. But it's very much control over command. Like, he's not dotting corners. And that's how you get into trouble with these home runs. Again, the stuff is so good right now against AAA hitters. I think that's fine. But I definitely wonder how that translates to the major leagues. I think about another guy who felt similar to Christian Scott coming through the minor leagues, and that's Brandon Pfaadt, who was very similar to Scott, where his fastball was really good against AAA hitters, but it's not been good against major league hitters. Scott's fastball is, I think, is better than Pfaadt's, has better specs, has better movement profile on it, has a better release point. And Pfaadt did something great with Brent Strom, where he moved his side to the side of the rubber because he's more of a running fastball than a rising fastball. So that running fastball moved over to the first base side was better against righties. But again, not similar thing, but just similar concept to where it's control over command. He's not diving corners. That's not something that he has. That's not a skill in his repertoire right now. So I do wonder how one of these hittable fastball is. And then the home run thing is weird too. I really want to dive deep in this home run thing because on the minor league season, Christian Scott has given up 11 hits and 6 of them are home runs. That doesn't make any sense to me. It's not normal. It's bizarre and stupid.
I'll counter that with two different things. One, they're still using the juice baseballs in AAA. We know that. They're still using those balls out there. They had the last few years. Two, I don't know, man. Like, Justin Verlander gives up a shit ton of home runs. Garrett Cole did for a while. Jacob DeGrom gives up. Max Scherzer gives up like 30 home runs a year. Those guys were predominant. I'm not saying Christian Scott is on the same level, but just the idea of like sometimes home runs are just kind of bullshit, like in that good pitchers give up home runs. It's obviously great when you're like a Logan Webb who can be a good pitcher and you don't give up home runs, because you then kind of always miss those blow-up games in a way. It's a lot harder to blow those guys up. But what Christian Scott does really well that you mentioned is that he is filling up the strike zone. Like, his damage is pretty much home runs, and he's not walking guys. So it's not like there's guys on base when he's giving up those home runs. So to me, that makes me kind of go like, I don't fucking care. It doesn't matter to me. It is weird, though. It is weird how many home runs he has given up. But I think that almost is more of just a weird sample size thing. And when you get to some of these minor league stadiums, they do have some joke dimensions at some of these parks as well.
Okay, well, I have that, because I went through every single home run that Christian Scott's given up this year. And because we talked about it last episode, that he gave one up to Oscar Colas, one to Danny Mendick. And the Danny Mendick one was 92 mile an hour exit velocity. And Oscar Colas was like 97 to the opposite field. So I was like, this is ridiculous. I also had in my notes that that home run to Manzardo was a fastball. So again, this is a game where he faced a lineup that was two-thirds lefties. He didn't have feel for either of his pitches that he usually uses to get lefties out. And he was just throwing his fastball. It's a good fastball. It's not a great fastball. It's a fine fastball. Probably objectively his worst pitch, but just he was relying on it, and that ball was hit out of the park. But again, only 100 mile an hour average exit velocity, and it's just these ratios again, giving up four walks so far in this AAA season, six home runs, and 11 hits is bizarre. And four of the six players who've hit home runs off him in the minor leagues this year have at least been in the major leagues, had major league plate appearances. It's going to be guys like it was Danny Mendick, it was Everson Pereira, but it's like these are guys who are on the upper echelon of AAA talent, because we talk a lot of shit about AAA talent, but these are the guys who are there, who are like waiting for major league jobs. And one of the other six is Kyle Manzardo, who by all accounts should be in the major leagues by now. This is just the Guardians manipulating his service time.
And Josh Naylor's been awesome.
Yeah, Josh Naylor's sick. I mean, the team can't use a DH. I'm sure they could. I guess they actually are playing really well right now. So I shouldn't be so mean to Cleveland. Go Cleveland. But only one of these home run balls off Christian Scott in the minor leagues this year has been hit harder than 105 miles an hour. And only one of them was hit over 400 feet. So the home runs are a thing right now, and the command over control is a thing right now. But like, I'm kind of sussed out by all of these. I really think part of it's the baseball and part of it's just minor league bullshit. And I wouldn't be really concerned about that. I would be a little more concerned again with the control over command stuff. If he starts throwing these fastballs middle to major league hitters, like, they're going to get pounced. But just, we're now going on the second year in a row where Christian Scott's leading all minor league pitchers to strikeout minus walk rate. He's at 39% strikeout minus walks right now, which is taking your strikeout rate and subtracting your walk rate. So 40% on that. What?
Where's Paul Skeens? Doesn't have better than that? Isn't Paul Skeens striking out like 58% and walking 10?
I stole that directly from a Michael Mayer tweet. So maybe I haven't checked the stats. I did this in the Paris airport today, in between games of FIFA. That's where I got these notes. But
hate to call you out for that, but I think Paul Skeens might have him beat. That's the only thing I'm going to say. But we'll blame Michael Mayer.
I'll check that one, because I have a Paul Skeens stat here next, because there's another Met that's directly behind Paul Skeens in a stat, which is really cool. But it's just he's very ready for the major leagues right now. It's just kind of a waiting game for him. We're waiting out Super 2. It's going to happen soon. I think there's probably a world where Hauser maybe does get bounced, but we're also living in a world where a pitcher gets injured every single day. So I'm sure this will just happily work itself out, like everything always seems to do. But he's going to come to the major league soon. He's going to be productive when he gets here. Oh my God, yeah. Paul Skeens is 50% strikeout minus walk rate.
That's what I was saying. How did he botch that stat so badly?
I don't know. Maybe I just misread it because I haven't slept in like 2 days. Maybe it was just in the Met system, but I'll blame him, but I don't really want to blame him. Paul Skeens has left every single player on base this year. He's not given up a run yet in the minor leagues. What a fucking freak. That's incredible.
Oh, yeah. He's gonna come up to the majors at some point and be a top 15 pitcher in the league automatically. Yeah.
That's amazing. But just the confidence right now in having Christian Scott's high. Maybe he doesn't walk in and be an ace. Like, I don't think he's like Jared Jones or Paul Skeens when he walks into the league. No. I think he's going to come in and be quite good. And I'm very confident in that assessment.
That's fine. He doesn't need to be that ace right now. Like, that can come with development. That can come with time. He's still so young in his pitching career. Another guy who's young in the pitching career, Nolan McLean. Now, I know you're going to talk about the pitching side of things, but he's hitting. He's also raking. Like, is this a real thing that the Mets are trying? Are we actually trying to develop him as a two-way player? Because he's got 20 at-bats, two home runs, mashing at the plate. It's kind of really cool. There's a lot of teams that draft these two-way players. Like, Reggie Crawford got drafted by the Giants. They decided he's going to be a one-way guy. They're not doing two-way with him. Brendan McKay was another big prospect that the Rays had years in the past, who was a massive two-way player in college. They decided he's going to be a pitcher. It's pretty interesting to see that Nolan McLean's getting to run it out on both sides right now.
And it's still in single A Brooklyn, so that I think there's still a long way to go. His pitching is getting so good that eventually there might be a point where they're just like, no. But like we've seen other great two-way players like not be able, like not teams not even let them try. J.D. Davis, Jay Cronenworth, Michael Lorenzen was not even that long ago. I saw him actually, he was doing hitting drills this offseason at Driveline because he was a free agent for so long, not a spring training. He did a full hitting assessment. He was smoking the ball. But the fact that the Mets are letting him do this amazing. I want to shout out another a friend, another listener of the podcast. Talked about him last week, Isaac Grofman. He did another big thread last week about Joe and Tong, this week about Nolan McLean, and he comped him to Otani. And he was like, yeah, I did that for the engagement. And like it worked super well. He almost got a million impressions on it. So great job doing the social media game there. But the only thing about McLean's the hitter, which was the thing about him in college, is he's super all or nothing. 11 strikeouts and no walks in 20 plate appearances. So 7 hits and 11 strikeouts is kind of bonkers to think about. That's just a lot of BABIP luck. But also he hits a piss out of the ball. Wish we had exit velocity on him, but he's in Brooklyn and not St. Lucie, which is even saying something about his development. But this pitching, this was the most encouraging start that he's had as a professional. He completed 5 innings for the first time. He's never even completed 4 before. That went with only giving up 2 hits, no earned runs, 6 strikeouts, 1 walk on 66 pitches. And I want another shout out to my guy, Prospect Hilt. He's been charting these AA and high A games. I talked about him last episode. I told him on Twitter. I'm like, hey, dude, you're doing great work. I've been shouting you out on my podcast. Like, you're incredible. He's like, wow, thank you so much. And he listens back. He was like, thank you. That was amazing. But there seems to be very rapid development happening here with Nolan McLean to where it seemed like he was going to be a project where now it's like, oh, he's going to be pitching and starting at AA this year. And like it's totally on like Buster only. Mets have no high end pitching prospects, but
not a single one.
In this start, McLean struck out 5 of the first 6 batters he faced. He sat a very comfortable 95, 96, touched 97. And his one walk was a 9 pitch battle with multiple foul balls to 3-2 count. All this from Prospect Hill. Dude's a dog. He charted every single at bat Nolan McLean had. He's addicted to the Mets pitching development right now. But some other great notes he had that like we're not going to see in the box score that I think are really encouraging from someone who's basically learning how to be a starting pitcher. He worked really fast. He said he would get the ball, get ready to go next pitch. It was like a bulldog out there. He was just going straight at guys. One slider was so nasty that it hit a lefty in the foot and he swung at it, which is pretty sick. Yeah. And he's with me in the take. I think I've heard other people saying this now too, where I feel like I might have been the first one to this, where like the fastball slider combo is so good, he could be a major league reliever right now. And like he would probably be one of like the 20 best in baseball. Like that combination is literally that good.
Wasn't it Matt Eddy who told us that his spin rate on his slider was like, would have been like easily the best in major. Oh, that was you. Okay. In major league baseball, like
in the breakout game.
Yeah. That he was so disgusting in that. And you totally see it. Like he does have that high octane arm that splitter or slider is just devastatingly nasty to see him go from a guy. Again, when we spoke to Matt Eddy originally talking about him, yeah, like he was like, he's a project. We're going to see what he does, but there's encouraging signs of what maybe he could be. But it feels like the ceiling keeps getting raised and raised and raised higher and higher and higher with this guy, which again, fucking Eric Jaeger, Jeremy Hefner, the pitching lab. Give them all the money, Steve Cohen. Give them all the money. Whatever they want, don't let them leave.
And we have given them all the money. The Mets are spending like so much more in player development than most other teams in baseball right now. That's something we've talked about on this show, that as MLB and all the owners are going to tax Steve Cohen, not let him spend money on the major league team on the field, there's no limit to how much you could spend on coaches, on technology, on development, and all this stuff. And Steve is spending so much of it. And that's the beauty of what he's doing with this organization. That's why when all these idiots say that he's the same as the Wilpons, blah, 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 you're totally fucking wrong. Because we're investing.
Do you remember his comment about what? Prospects? He said they're the best investment you could ever make. He's like, prospects, like, he's like, I make so much money on prospects. Why would I not want them to be good? Because think about it. If you can get those 3 or 4 years of the minimum pay at the major league level and they're good major league players, something that we've talked about the Mets desperately lack, which we need some of those cheap, young, good players. He's like, I'm making hand over fist. I'm making so much money.
The Mets are always famous for like having really good scouts and not doing anything else when they got to the minor leagues. And I think Steve has added like 30, 40, 50 development and like coaches, analysts. And I think we're probably spending, like, I'm not even trying to be like hyperbolic again here. We're probably spending 75 to 100 times more money per year on player development than we were under the Wilpons. That's not something to sneeze at. And like, we're seeing these results happen fast. We're seeing this churn out quickly. Like, we haven't really seen it for like a high end hitting prospect yet, but the fact that we're doing these prospect reports every single week, and every single week there's like 4 or 5 pitchers who are doing like stupidly amazing shit. Yeah. Like it's so fucking real. Like, this guy Nolan McLean was a two-way player in the Big 12. He was a power hitter, struck out a lot, and a reliever, and he just threw 66 pitches and crushed a high A start. He's like getting gear gearing up to be a double A pitcher soon. When you're a double A pitcher, you're like ready for the major leagues. Like if you go to the Arizona Fall League this year, like that's incredible. Like the wins and player development that we're having early this season are so fucking good. It all goes back to also the pitching because we're game planning so well at the major league level. Guys are learning new pitches when they get to the Mets. Like everything is working really well on the pitching side, which is just so harmonious for me as a fan of this team and doing this show. It's so beautiful for me to do this content when all that's happening because it's just, it's so much fucking fun to go through every single week these minor league box scores and videos and these guys like Prospect Hilt who are charting these pitches being like, oh yeah, Mets are dominating again.
And you see it with another guy too, Jonah Tong, who not a name you necessarily knew before the season started, but he had another great appearance. And this is how you know that people are starting to get hip to Jonah Tong. In my YouTuber Dynasty Fantasy Baseball League, we run 40-man rosters. We go deep. Shout out Bengal if you guys watch Madden videos. I don't know how many of you do, but Bengal's a friend of mine. He's in the league. He asked me there, he's like, so who are some prospect pitchers you looking at? And he's like, anybody on the Mets? And I was like, well, of course, Christian Scott, name some of those big guys. He goes, what about Jonah Tong? And I was like, oh, you know about Jonah Tong. Okay, someone's been doing their research.
No, yeah, I know why Bengal knows about Jonah Tong because MLB Pipeline tweeted about him. And that, you know, that's how DP gets in the Twitter sphere with these baseball guys. He's a football guy. And he's got his big week coming up with the drafts on Thursday night. Yes. But Jonah Tong, again, it's also so great that we have the StatCast stuff for these guys in low A. When he gets to call up Brooklyn, it's going to be so bittersweet to me because I'm going to want to go watch him pitch. But also, I'm not going to have all the sweet, sweet day every single start. But another great outing. And I say outing because he had an outing and not a start the last time he pitched, which was 4 1/3 innings, 6 strikeouts, 2 hits, no runs, no walks, exactly 50 pitches. 27 strikeouts and 12 2/3 innings with a 0.0 ERA. That is comparable to what Paul Skeens is doing in AAA right now. He has the second lowest strikeout rate in the entire minor leagues, only behind Skeens, 56% to 57%. That's 19.2 K per nine for the K per nine folks who don't want to learn, like do strikeout rate because it's significantly better. And again, having StatCast is rad for this because we're seeing he's throwing 60 to 70% fastballs and guys are not hitting it. It's averaging 20 inches of inverted vertical break, IVB. That's the most for any pitcher in the FCL. I want to shout out my guy, MJD Analysis, who's teaching me how to do IVB with StatCast, with Savant data. It's like a weird mathematical equation. I forgot it, but I put it in an Excel doc, and I've been doing it for these guys. That fastball also has a 47% whiff rate and a 44% call swing strike rate this season. Dude's a pure freak. Pure fucking freak show and talk. Like the only thing that I'm scared about him with major league stars is that he's just like a small guy, and he comes like super over the top. Where usually the small guys have that like nice little flat approach angle now, whereas Jonah Tong, like Isaac talked about in his thread last week, he comes over, way over the top like glass now. Because the life on that fastball is delusionally good. Like he looks like such a super dude. It's like him and Nolan McLean.
How hard does he throw?
Like 94, 95. Like it's not even hard, okay. But the life is insane. So I wonder if he still gets these whiffs. He keeps going to the upper minors. Another guy where double A is going to be a big deal for him with that velocity. But just him and Tong and McLean right now are about to take the league by storm. If you guys are in deep dynasty leagues, like everyone's going to start picking them up. Everyone on Twitter is going to start talking about them. Ernest Dove, who's a Mets minor league analyst, he had a hilarious tweet about Nolan McLean. Be like, people are really talking about Nolan McLean. Things are picking up. He might be the next big, great prospect. I'm just like, I love when people are like, yeah, people are talking. People are talking. The guy's awesome.
Got his finger on the pulse, man. He's down in Port St. Lucie. I think the guy lives down there. He's locked in. He's always going. He's always got great video. Shout out to him. He's always got a lot of videos of these guys.
Great Twitter follow. Yeah, but also funny that in this game, Tong piggybacked on Austin Troster, who's another draftee from the last draft. Yep. I think he was the guy from Missouri. Who had the growth spurt or something, who went from like throwing 90 to like 99 through college. He sat 90 to 94, 95 in this start, but four and two thirds, 8 strikeouts, 70% fastballs, and had a 43% whiff rate, 2 earned runs and 11 innings pitched. And we're seeing a lot of the minor league teams do this where they're just basically throwing guys a lot of innings because now Major League Baseball teams have like a full 165 player organizational limit that includes players who are injured. So these minor league teams are going to get completely like kind of fucked with pitching depth as we get through the season, but this St. Lucie team is fucking electric. There's another guy who had a great start this week who I've never heard of. I don't know when the Mets drafted him. I don't know when they acquired him. I don't know when he's from. I don't know how tall he is. Jack Weninger. You ever hear of him?
I'm gonna do a little quick little research about him. So it looks like he went to the University of Illinois. So he's Big Ten man, James. Big Ten man for you. Sixth round pick last year. Is Urbana-Champaign, is that the main campus?
That's the main campus, yeah.
Okay, he's a Fighting Illini then. Jonathan Andrew Weninger. He is 6'4", 200 pounds. He's a big boy.
big boy, and he throws six pitches. Kitchen sink guy, which definitely makes sense as a Big Ten pitcher, led by a lethal changeup.
He used to be a Murray State racer. He's a transfer guy to Illinois. Oh,
I like that. I like a little transfer in the baseball up there. Get to the Big Ten. But 10 strikeouts, one hit, no walks, no earned runs, and six innings on Tuesday. Like, not a crazy velo guy, which makes sense. He was a six-round pick. He was sitting 92 to 94. But he has a really, really, really unique sinker. It's a bizarre pitch. I caught a video of it. It's like a rising sinker with 13 inches of run. It's crazy, crazy. 18 inches of inverted vertical break with 13 inches of run. It's a really weird pitch. It's the kind of outlier pitch that can like carry a guy who has a lethal changeup in six pitches, like nine to maybe even like a back end starting spot.
I mean, dude, he's struck out 28 batters in 18 innings. He's just getting crazy whiffs.
Dude, that PSL team where the pitching lab is fucking cooking. Those guys are probably live in the pitching lab. Those guys, they're in there every single day.
You go to Florida.
I mean, you're really itching to go back to Florida, huh? You just love Florida.
Love Florida. It's great. The weather's awesome. And we have to get there before it gets disgustingly hot. That's the key.
That's true. I mean, I guess we need one of us needs to either get on TV or get a real writing job with a credentialed outlet to get media credentials now for the Mets. So maybe, I think you're probably more likely for TV. I'm more likely for a writing job. Whatever happens first, we're going right there. We're going to say we need credentials for this. But the pitching lab is cooking. The pitching lab is cooking so hard. I love how I've totally just like taken over these prospect reports weekly and just been like, here's 15 minutes at Mets pitching prospect. So I just
take them.
Took over this thing. That's all I want to talk about.
Nah, you're the pitching guy. I'm the hitting guy. It's a little yin and yang here. Alex Ramirez, still hitting. Still hitting. He walked a couple times. He's stealing bases. 135 WRC plus with a 9% walk rate. If Alex Ramirez walks 9% of the time, all of a sudden we're like, good baseball player again? Like, what's going on here? And this is kind of, we saw this a little bit with Ronnie Mauricio. I feel like similar age, similar level, like similar time where Ronnie at that double A-ish level started to be a little bit more patient to the point where you're like, okay, now I see that this guy can be a Major League Baseball player. It's not as volatile necessarily as it once was. But for Alex Ramirez to be walking 9% for a guy who walked, what, like 3, 4% in years past, that's really big.
It's also like, I feel like we talk about this every single week, but getting out of Brooklyn has to give these guys a new lease on life. Just because you just can't hit there. You cannot hit there. And I feel like also these guys like Mauricio and Ramirez, what were you going to say?
Brandon Nimmo talked about it on the Mookie Betts podcast. I'm going to do that again. He just had a lot of good stuff. He was like, yeah, when I was playing in Brooklyn, he's like, I struggled big time. He was like, I'm living in places that have bars on the windows. He's like, I'm from Wyoming. Like, he's like, I'm living in New York. He's like, I had a really hard time in Brooklyn adjusting, playing there. The schedule is bizarre. The field's weird. Yeah. It's like the lifestyle is just something I'm not used to. He goes, to take the subway to the game. Sometimes it took me 40 minutes to get there. He was like, it was very stressful for me as a young kid from Wyoming living there. And I, like, that's real. These are real things. I remember I had a professor at South Carolina who owned the Savannah Sand Gnats at one point. And he talked about 16-year-old Wilmer Flores living in Savannah, Georgia as a Mets prospect. He didn't know a lick of English, living in Savannah, Georgia. He's like, that's like my son's age. He's like, I had to like take care of him. He was a child.
Coney Island also itself is not really Brooklyn. Like Coney Island, it's insane. It's a really terrible place, but it definitely used to be nice. But and then on top of that, you add the atmospheric conditions of playing baseball on the beach. It's hard to hit there. It's really hard to hit. And I feel like also these guys like Ramirez and Ronnie Mauricio, where you get the big signing bonus, you're a big international prospect, you probably get a little discouraged, but you also know the team is still confident in you. You probably get a little bit bored down there in Brooklyn too, where it's just like, I know that I'm like one step away from the real step. And I just like, I feel like I'm doing everything right. I'm not getting results. So I kind of have to zone out of it a little bit to keep my confidence up. And you get to Binghamton, you start to play regular baseball again in like a more controlled environment. Our buddy Nick LaRue, I was talking to him because he was with the Asheville Tourists, the Astros high A team last week. And there's like certain minor league rules about where you can stay when you are playing in different cities. And he said those guys were staying all the way in Gowanus. And they were taking buses from Gowanus to Coney Island for these games. And he said they got stuck in traffic one day. It was like an hour and a half to the field. So I'm like, that's crazy to play a baseball game after that. Then you play the same team 6 days in a row. Single A is weird baseball. But happy to see Ramirez move up and crushing it. Now, a couple levels below that, guy I talked about last week who is crushing the bar right now, probably the best results for any Mets minor leaguer right now. Nick Morabito, 7-for-18 since we talked last week with 3 more stolen bases. Hard hit rate hovering around 50% at Port St. Lucie. The only thing I really want to see him on Corcoran, like he's like a thick athletic kid. Like his max exit velocity is only 105 miles an hour. If I can see a 110 I'm suddenly sky high on him. And these guys, Ramirez and Morabito, though. I'm not, Ramirez maybe a little more so now, the hitting ceiling's back up. I still don't think like just a corner outfielder probably with like 20 homer power. Like these are the kind of guys that come up and they become your Tyrone Taylors. Like they become the guys who are free on your roster
for them,
who are getting 200 to 400 plate appearances in a year, depending on how good or bad they are. Like maybe Ramirez, or one of these guys breaks through in a few years and becomes a real starter, but you don't pay them anything. They play, they're good baseball players. They wind up getting two WAR. They wind up being a 110 WRC plus guy. They wind up coming in late games for defense. They wind up pinch running and stealing a base. They wind up giving your team a rush of youth and athleticism and joy and vigor. Like that's the kind of thing Mets player development has been missing the last few years. We've been really good like at converting these high draft picks usually into actual starting caliber baseball players, or just guys in starting caliber baseball players, but then you need this like this roster depth to be built up. And that's another one reason why we want to do this with you guys every single week, but just another reason why we're confident with this regime is doing so far. David Stearns and the Steve Cohen.
And one guy who's not hopefully going to be one of those just fill-in players, Ryan Clifford as well. Not putting up the craziest numbers right now just yet in Double-A, but he did have a 4-walk game, and we appreciate patience over here on the Mets Up Podcast.
Appreciate it a lot. I think he's still in Brooklyn, though.
Oh, is he not in Binghamton? I thought he's in Binghamton.
I think when he gets to Binghamton, he's going to have like a hot stretch in him. I think he's still trapped in Brooklyn. I'll just double check that. But
oh, what the hell? Why is he still in Brooklyn? Okay, yeah, hey, hand up. I just assume this is what happens when I assume. Because in my head, I go, get the big left-handed hitter out of Brooklyn. There's no reason for him to be there. Just put him in Double-A. But apparently, Ryan Clifford is still in Brooklyn. So maybe we only have a couple more weeks left to go find him out there.
Yeah, no, whatever. But nevertheless, that's the prospect report this week. You guys have been saying that you like this a lot. Again, we're trying to be real podcasters because we'd love to get a sponsor on this thing, a real one. So we're trying some segments here. And the two segments people have liked so far. So happy it's worked. And now we're going to preview the Cardinals series. And I'm a big fan of St. Louis Cardinals right now because they are becoming one of the true dumpster fires in Major League Baseball. And it is so fucking nice to see that a team that was winning on bullshit, on nothing for years and years and years, is now, it's all finally catching up with them. They're not developing players well. Sorry to my boy Jordan Walker, got sent down again. Sorry. Didn't have a good run. Like he could be so good. Like it's crazy. I think Robert Ortiz has talked about him second time this episode. It's crazy to see the next Randy Arozarena happen in real time. It's unbelievable to watch it live because the next, whatever team Jordan Walker plays for next, wow, is he going to be an all-star? But the Cardinals are horrible. They are such a fucking shit show right now in terms of player development, in terms of pitching development, in terms of coaching, all this stuff. It is a disaster, and I love watching it because I hate them.
Again, still can't wrap my head around the idea, one, that John Mozeliak still has a job, their GM. That guy sucks. That guy stinks. Two, that Ali Marmol got an extension. The Cardinals finished in last place last year. They missed the playoffs for the first time in however many years, finished below 500 in how many years, and they go, you know what? Give him more. Give him more time. Let's see what this guy can do. And I'll tell you what he does. He ruins everything he touches. Ali Marmol has killed careers. Nolan Arenado stinks all of a sudden. Paul Goldschmidt stinks all of a sudden. And this is the biggest jinx in the world. But you know what? I'm going to take the risk here. The Cardinals have been playing so, so awful. They won a game today against the Diamondbacks, against their former Jordan Montgomery. But like you go up and down this lineup, and it's the one guy that Ali Marmol hated who is playing so well, and it's Wilson Contreras, the guy who he tried to banish because Yadier Molina said he doesn't catch baseballs well enough. He's the only guy outside of, I guess, maybe Mason Wynn as well, who's hitting for this team.
I think Contreras also got hurt the other day, if I'm not mistaken. But Mason Wynn's fake hitting. Mason Wynn has like a 400 BABIP right now.
He's Cardinals hitting.
He's fast. Yeah, Cardinals. Mason Wynn's a good ball player. Also, Lars Nootbaar came back off the IL, and he's walking more and he's striking out. Very good baseball player. I love Lars Nootbaar. Yeah, I'll always have a special place in my heart for Lars Nootbaar, and he hasn't even really gotten going yet after his broken rib at the end of the spring. But it's crazy to look at an NL Central like standings even a month into the season and see the Cardinals in last place. It's fucking awesome. Weird. It is amazing. Again, I want them to have a sustained period of getting smoked. Like they lost the other night 14-1 to the Diamondbacks. Great. I wanted more. I wanted more.
I watched every run. I watched every run. Because I got Corbin Carroll in fantasy. I got Ketel Marte in fantasy. And also, I like watching the Diamondbacks team. They're fun offensively. They hit the ball well. They play fun baseball. Snakes alive as always. But yeah, this pitching is just so utter dog shit. The only guy that's been, I guess, like good has been Sonny Gray. Lance Lynn's been okay, but he's also, again, fake good. That's like pitching in St. Louis against the NL Central type of bullshit. But like Miles Michaelis, your boy Kyle Gibson, Steven Matz went back to being irrelevant. Like, thank God he had that one good start against the Dodgers. So don't you fucking do this to me, Steven Matz. And then he stinks again because he's a fucking loser. I want to beat the living shit out of the Cardinals. They're a different kind of hate. We're like, we hate the Braves, we hate the Phillies, we hate the Yankees, we hate all those teams. But the Cardinals are a different hate because, again, they don't really matter, but they're so fucking smug that I just want to wipe. I want to kill Ollie Marmol's career. I want him to go away, although maybe I want him to stay as long as possible.
We also definitely have inherited hate for the Cardinals as well because they're a traditional Mets rival back in the day, 70s yeah. and 80s. I think you also undersold, I think, how good Sonny Gray's been this year since he came off the aisle.
Yeah.
He's been like one of the best pitchers in baseball. 36% strikeouts, 1% walks. His FIP is 0.7. Oh. Yeah, it's pretty. His ERA is 1. Like he's already accumulated 1 F4 in 17 innings. Like the guy's been ridiculous. And also, they struck crazy random gold lightning in a bottle with Ryan Helsley. Whenever he's healthy, he's one of the best relievers in baseball. He just throws 103 miles an hour. Not many people on earth are built to do that. I tailgate with Ryan Helsley for the Ohio State-Michigan game. He doesn't look like he can throw 103 miles an hour. He feels like a very regular guy. He's not even that much bigger than me.
Hates the Braves, too.
Yeah. He was rocking a Zeke Cowboys jersey there, which I thought was crazy at the Ohio State-Michigan game. Yeah, bad look for him.
Zeke,
but
though. Okay.
Yeah, again, fun guy. Fun to drink beers with. He could put them back. Him and Bednar were just a hell of a time, whereas Jordan Hicks is just the bane. What a fucking prick that guy was. But this Cardinals team, we're getting kind of boned a little bit in the pitching matchups. Friday night, we're both going to be in the ballpark. First time back in the ballpark in a month. I'm really excited. And thankfully, going to the ballpark on an Apple TV game. Love Wayne Randazzo, but he's not Gary. Just got to say it. Shout out Wayne. He's not Gary.
Shout out Wayne.
Jose Budo versus Miles Mikolas. I have a lot in the line this pitching matchup. I need everything to go right for me there. I'm excited. This is my first time this season seeing Budo live. I'm really jazzed up for that one. If this start goes well, he might have to lock in the DH gate, Jose Budo jersey. And then Saturday afternoon, another weekend where the Mets have multiple games on national television. Wouldn't you know, people like to see the Mets. Adrian Hauser versus Sonny Gray. Not that excited about that one. But it lines up well. Lines up well for the way the Mets like to play their series. And then Sunday matinee, 1:40. Just a game of a couple dudes who are going to pitch. Jose Quintana versus Lance Lynn. Those two are going to shake hands on the mound before the game and say, "Yeah, I have a good one." I love those guys.
They're gonna cheers after they both come out of the game. They're going to meet in the tunnel and just have a nice cold beer together and be like, "Yeah, that's baseball. That's how it should be played."
Lynn hasn't even been bad this year either. Like, I also just still don't think he's that bad. Like, I don't think Lance Lynn mentally will let himself be that bad, I guess, unless he's a Dodger, because I'm sure he just hates Los Angeles so much that he's like, "I don't even give a fuck about this team. I don't want to be good for them." But he's just going to look you in your eyes and throw you fastballs and dare you to hit him. Usually you're just not. This Cardinals team is still good defensively. That ballpark is still a great place to pitch. And yeah. It's just that's always going to be good going well for them. But like you said, right now, their guys who are supposed to be hitting are not hitting. Brandon Crawford is playing baseball for them sometimes. Alec Burleson, who's the guy who's just always supposed to break out, he's never broken out. This team is just really strange what's going on with them.
Yeah, I mean, again, I hope bad things happen to the St. Louis Cardinals. I do love Arenado and Goldschmidt. They're like kind of fake Cardinals. Don't really hate them that much because they're just all-time greats, like future Hall of Famers probably. But I hate this organization as a whole. And I love to see, like you said, the Cardinals way, the bullshit that, like, unfortunately, Keith Hernandez, this is where like he gets a little bit curmudgeon-y sometimes when he starts talking about like the Cardinals way and how great it was. Like, yeah, in the 70s and 80s and 90s, whatever, sure. But now that baseball is modernized, they have not caught up. And it's so, so painfully obvious. Even today on MLB Network, I was watching Brian Kenny and Jason Stark and Sean Casey were giving it to the Cardinals for sending Jordan Walker down. They're like, "He's not the problem. The problem is that Nolan Arenado is not hitting, that Paul Goldschmidt isn't hitting. Yeah, he's not hitting well, but maybe you just got to let him play a little bit. You guys might be giving him bad info. Like, just let him go out and do his thing."
It's also classic, definitely, St. Louis Cardinals bullshit, where Jordan Walker right now, all of his underlying stuff is better than it was at any point last year. He's chasing less often. His defense is even a little bit better, significantly better than it was last year. He's barreling the ball more. He's lifting the ball more. He's walking more. Like, he's hitting the ball really hard and pulling it. It's just, I think they were just like a 21-year-old kid not ready for the show. Have you seen
Jordan? Michael Ciani up there.
Jordan Walker this year has had, I think, 400-foot outs.
Wow.
If even two of those were home runs, like, its whole stat line would be different. Or it's just like, this is what this Cardinals team is going to do. They did the same thing to Victor Scott, who I don't think is very good at all. But it's just like,
no, he stinks.
Yeah, I don't think he's very good. But it's just like, what do you have that's better than these guys right now in your major league roster? Like, you have young, athletic players who you should be building around because your team isn't a lull right now. I think they just have disillusioned themselves in thinking they're still good and still the Cardinals, where they're just not. And they also, I saw a tweet about today, Innocerus was tweeting about it. Jeff Albert, who was a pretty good, pretty famous hitting coach. I don't know if the Cardinals let him go or if he left on his own accord, but since they've let him go, they've stopped pulling their fly balls, which is a really good thing to do in baseball, is pulling your fly balls. It's kind of the number one thing you want to do as a hitter. You kind of learn that at an early age, too. I don't know why some of these old baseball guys think that's a bad thing, to pull your fly balls. Like, you'd say, once you start like playing real baseball at 12 years old, it's like, yeah, try to hit the ball in the air, pull it a little bit. Like, oh, yeah, no shit, it goes further. But they don't do that anymore. And if you do that, don't do that, you're not going to hit well, especially when you play in a big place like Busch Stadium. There's just, I love seeing them fall apart. I want to see this happen more and more for years and years. I don't want the Cardinals to make the playoffs until the 2040s. That's like a personal goal, dream of mine. Anything I could do to make that happen, I will do it.
Saturday, City Connect debut as well. Excited to see what they look like out on the field. I'm not going to be there Saturday, I don't think. But Friday will definitely be in the ballpark. Maybe you'll see us outside the stadium before the game. James, I don't know what your schedule is looking like, but it'll be good to rip some content.
Yeah, I'm down to rip some content.
All right, so keep an eye out for us. We're going to do some sort of trivia, games, questions, maybe even a prize or two for you guys. So if you see us outside the ballpark, come up to us, talk to us, and we will put you on camera if you want to be. If you don't want to be, just say hello. But otherwise, we're going to be making some content, having some fun back out at the stadium. James, back on American soil. We got anything else to talk about this episode?
That's it. Somehow squeaked an hour out of this.
Yeah, of course. We're sick in the head. We love baseball. Oh! We've got a lot of new reviews, James. We got a lot of new reviews.
Nice. I like this.
We got a bunch of new ones here. Oh my goodness.
How many are
there? There's like four. So we're gonna read them. This one comes from Chianobi. Best Mets cast out there. 5 stars. Thank you, Chianobi. I've been listening to the show since the Scherzer Twitter space, and it quickly became my favorite Mets podcast to listen to after a series. It was fun to see them join the Mets, but I'm loving the more casual, honest vibe this year. Thank you for doing what you guys do. Thank you for the nice review. We really do appreciate it. This one comes in from Pinchas Schwartz-Bergenstein. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
This is a crazy name.
Dope.
Best Mets pod, 5 stars. Appreciate you. Incredible podcast. Mark and James blend analytics and their feelings to give the best analyzation of the Mets out there. The prospects reports are great as well. Well, we hope you enjoyed this one. Really look forward to listening to new episodes after every series. Aaron Lane, Joshua's brother, said 5 stars. Good. So I guess good 5 stars for him. We'll take that. I like that good is just the subject of this one.
Good.
Easily the best Mets show. Been listening since 2021. I have fun with every episode, and it's even better now that you're unaffiliated with the team. It takes me back to the OG days of the show, and if I had to pick, I'd probably say James is my favorite host. Keep up the good work. Well, fuck you. How about that?
Hell yeah, that's my guy right there. That's my dog.
5 stars. Last one here from LT Spears. That's a strong name. That's like a guy who should be playing linebacker in the NFL. LT Spears.
In like 2007. Like, yes.
I don't know how he'd. How he'd adapt to the modern game, but yeah, he definitely was good back in the early 2000s. Dear New York Mets, call Christian Scott up now. 5 stars. This is my favorite podcast to listen to. I've been watching Mark on YouTube, and I think James is incredible with his pitching breakdown. I love the prospect report. My favorite prospects are Alex Ramirez and Jet Williams. Christian Scott is great and should be called up ASAP. I appreciate your descriptions of the games because as a blind listener, I'm able to enjoy the games too. I have a question. Can the Mets lose from April 29th through May 3rd and June 21st through June 23rd? The Mets are cool, but go Cubs. Wow. But seriously, hope you continue to grow and reach more baseball fans. That was a roller coaster of
incredible review.
First, we thought he could be an NFL player because of his name. We found out he's blind.
You're the man.
That was a twist I wasn't ready for.
Shout question. Out, LT,
I don't know if you can reach out to us. How does a blind person write a review?
Gotta be Braille.
I don't know. This is a question. Like, maybe this is ignorant. I don't know, but I'm genuinely curious. Like, is there a blind keyboard? I don't know. I've never
thought another person now before. That I'm going to be their favorite host instead of you because you don't know about Braille. Mark's not hip to Braille.
I'm curious, but shout out to him, Cubs fan, and appreciate that you listen to the podcast, even though you don't like our team, but we appreciate it. Guys, of course, as always, if you want to be shouted out on the podcast, drop us a review. Again, 5 stars, whatever it is. We just want honest stuff. As long as it's not inappropriate, we will shout you out. You can do that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you do. Drop us a rating, drop us a review. Follow us on all our social media at MetStup on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. New York,
Don't go
MetStup Podcast YouTube channel. MetStup Podcast YouTube channel. We're doing good stuff over there. Approaching 4,500 subs, maybe 5,000 by the end of May. That's going to be my goal. We want 5,000 subs by the end of May. So go subscribe over there if you have not yet done so. Follow James on Twitter at
James_Shiano.
And me at Giraffe Neck Mark with a C. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for watching. Let's go Knicks. Let's go Mets. LFGM.
Let's go Knicks. See you guys next time.